This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. We are turning our attentions to someone who is very important to movement activities, to law in general, and to really, this segment is done with a relative degree of jubilation because there aren't that many victories, particularly looking at the prison industrial complex and the oppression of people who are political in this country that we are able to accomplish. And Lynn Stewart has been brought home. She has just been freed from prison following a worldwide campaign to release her, and even as she battles cancer, is preparing for the next phase of her life. As she said, "I see myself fighting to bring home all of the political prisoners who have sacrificed their lives for causes and community. I see myself taking up the cause of women in prison and the inequities that they and their children face. Mostly, I hope I will be able to speak to new lawyers who've just embarked on the yellow brick road towards justice and rouse their hearts and souls, and that of all who will be listening." Well, we're going to start with...
I'm going to start with a report by Mimi Rosenberg of the night that Lynn Stewart returned to New York City, freed from prison. And then we're going to have a live interview with Lynn in New York, and we're going to be really looking forward to that. Let's go to what was it, LaGuardia?
It was LaGuardia Airport, and it was New Year's Day. How appropriate. Welcoming home Lynn Stewart. All I see is smiles. I see smiles as we are waiting in front of Gate D1. To welcome home Sister Lynn Stewart. My sister here, you are the wife of another political prisoner. What are your sentiments?
I'm Daquee Keone Siddiqui. When I found out the news last night, I said, this is what an incredible way to start a new year and a reminder to people who have become disillusioned and a lesson for people who don't know that there is nothing greater than the power of the people and that this is one out and so many more to go because there are hundreds.
And who are we going to bring home?
And we are working to bring home my love, my husband, Sekou Odinga, who Lynn was an attorney for, so I couldn't even think about not being here because he is not able to be here to welcome her home, and he has been praying and worried and concerned about her every single day since her imprisonment. So this is just a beautiful day and a reminder for us to continue the work, that the struggle continues, and we can do it. We dare to struggle, and we dare to win, and we will win.
And you are my sister?
Maggie Tobin for the Culture Committee, local chapter.
Tell me what this moment means.
It's unreal. It's unreal. I can't believe it's happening. When I found out last night, that, and then I found out that she's actually on her way home, it's fantastic.
And
we have a lot more work to do.
What do we have to do?
We got to free Mumia. We've got to free Leonard Peltier. We've got to free all political prisoners. That's what we got to do. Thank you.
Bob Boyle, what does this moment mean to you for all your intrepid work and your personal friendship with Sister Lynn? How do you articulate this extraordinary moment?
Well, it's a bit unreal. It's unreal for Lynn. She's trying to have it settle in. You know, I'm enormously happy and gratified and even thankful that this has happened and that the government filed this motion yesterday. And what's important now is that she's home with her family, with her loved ones, with her community, and she's out of prison.
And, Bob, what do you think this may mean in terms of perspective about other political prisoners? Do you think that we have brought together the kind of legal, political activists, and general public sentiment that are going to bring home more of our brothers and sisters still behind the walls?
I hope so. I hope that the other political prisoners don't have to have a terminal illness before they get out of jail. Many are elderly already and suffering from serious diseases, albeit maybe not life-threatening illnesses. And we have to keep that in mind. Let's savor this victory. when Lynn walked out of prison yesterday, the spirits of some of the political prisoners who are still there and some of the others who never made it out of prison because they died in jail went with her and got out of prison. And that's what I would like to take from this moment.
And what do you think turned the corner?
It's really difficult to say. I think there was a big movement in support. I have to commend some of the people who are in the government who obviously had to make the decision to do this and not oppose it in what can be a controversial case. And I don't know what necessarily was behind their decision, but I'm happy they made that decision.
Bob Boyle, thanks for your years of work on behalf of our sister, Lynn Stewart.
Thank you.
Suzanne Ross, this moment, what is it? What does it mean?
Don't make me cry.
I have no problem making you cry. It's totally authentic and real. And why not at this point?
So unbelievably deserved. So should never have happened in the first place. But still, it is such a celebration. And look at the people's love. You know, what I was thinking on the way here, more and more political prisoners are getting the kind of honor they deserve. And, you know, the brother who just heard the funeral of the brother who passed from the Angola 3. There have been more and more recognition of the political prisoners, at least in their death. And as I said, when Bashir Hamid passed and I went to the mosque for his funeral, history will absolve these people. History will show who they really were. This government tries to portray them as terrorists. And the people love these people. From Mumia to Lynn to Bashir Hamid, to, you know, there's unbelievable appreciation, love, and respect for those who've made these kinds of sacrifices. And so Lynn, too, is coming out as a heroine. And I can't use the language that I want to use to say who these people are, including that liberal judge, Kotel, who managed to do such a dastardly thing as to increase the sentence to 10 years. So now he looks good because he signed the paper. But the whole system was against her, every single one of them.
Yes.
And we've shown the kind of support, this movement has shown the kind of love that we need to free them all.
Thank you, Suzanne Ross. Next in line, Mumia Abu-Jamal. Absolutely. Now, here's a woman who is referred to all the time as my daughter, the doctor. Zenobia, this moment?
This moment's amazing. I just cannot wait to see my mother and let her get all these hugs from her grandchildren, which I know will be the best medicine ever.
And what are you thinking? As one of the grandchildren soon, momentarily about to see Grandma, our sister, Lynn Stewart.
I missed her, a lot, so I'm just really, really excited to have her back, with us, and it's really nice to have her.
And what about you with those beautiful flowers for Grandma?
I'm excited.
Why are you so excited?
Because my grandma's coming home.
Wow. Isn't this an impressive homecoming? Terrific. Terrific. There's a raucous group who I've seen before of all sizes. Oh, my God, with gorgeous red and white flowers. And the last time I saw you folks, we were saying free Lynn Stewart. So where are we at now? What does this incredible moment mean to you, her family members?
Overjoyed.
Best celebration ever.
Yep, the best way to start the new year.
We can't. We can't wait.
With the such a dignified, committed, wonderful, undaunted woman is part of your family and returns to our communities.
Absolutely.
We're going to savor that. And wait, who's this little one?
This is her great-grandson, Connor. Say hi.
What's your name?
Connor Baby. Oh, wow. Are you excited? Yeah, he's shaking his head, and he's got this great ski cap on. No, it's not a ski cap?
Say, we're waiting for great, right?
We're waiting for great-grandma.
All right. And how old are you?
Two.
All right. Well, we certainly have introduced you now to the cutest member of the entourage here who's welcoming back Sister Lynn Stewart. Thank you. And that was Brenna, and we have our two-year-old, Connor. Yes.
My two-year-old grandbaby.
Oh, she says that's such the proud one here. And at this point, there are dozens of people lined up, all getting ready to welcome Sister Lynn Stewart back to her community, to her family, into the movement that she sacrificed so much for. Lynn Stewart is here, and she is being besieged.
We love Lynn! We love Lynn! We love Lynn!
As this throng of well-wishers converge on Sister Lynn, her family, community activists, people who have struggled around political prisoners, what an absolutely extraordinary victory and moment. Lynn is actually looking great. She's standing up. She's robust. She's greeting her grandkids. She's greeting the community here. Oh, it is a joyous, rapturous moment for all here.
We love Lynn. We love Lynn.
She's flanked by Ralph Pointer, who went to fetch her back from Texas.
They said, don't go to the hotel, go to the prison. They're waiting for you. Get Lynn out. And she was waiting at the prison. Thank you, Mimi.
Oh, Ralph. Oh, love you, brother. Love you.
Love you.
And Lynn is simply being mobbed. And Ralph, how are you holding up?
Well, I'm holding up great now. It was difficult for 4 years. Now it's better.
Are you a believer in the might of the people, my brother?
Oh, you can't forget the might of the people. This is what did it.
And now we work on Sekou Odinga next and free all political prisoners.
Free all political prisoners.
Woo!
It's the beginning. We're going from here.
Victory always.
We love Lynn. We love Lynn. We love
Lynn. Lynn Stewart, gorgeous, wonderful. What joy being able to hug my sister Lynn Stewart.
Shit. I'm good, but I'm not great, you know. I can manage, but I get very, very tired. So, in a word, Ralph never gave up hope. Ralph was fighting down to the final moments. But me, I was very discouraged. And I figured the strategy was to just keep me in there until I was closer and closer and closer, and then let me come home. And without shackles and without a belly chain and without cuffs on, felt pretty good. And when that didn't happen, now I'm home. I'm still pretty much with it, I hope. and here I am with these wonderful children and grandchildren. And I look forward to beating the odds now.
Well, we could go on. I just wanted to give you some of the flavor of how exuberant people were who had worked on the Lynn Stewart campaign these long years, and many of whom continued to work to free all political prisoners and really to break down the walls of this grotesque, barbaric prison industrial complex that we have in this country. So now, without further ado, Lynn Stewart.
Well, hi, Mimi.
Oh, my goodness. You know,
I'm still my eyes. I tell you, I cannot hear that airport scene without it coming back to me, and my emotions of that moment were so overwhelming. I cannot tell you, Mimi. I cannot tell you. Well, you were there, you know.
It's glorious because it's a harbinger. Aside from bringing you home, it's a harbinger of that momentous occasion when we do free, which we will continue to redouble our efforts to do, all of our political prisoners. You know, it did remind me of that wonderful moment when Geronimo Jijaga Pratt also was free and he was welcomed to New York City. I was wondering now, in retrospect, how you analyze and what we should really understand about your prosecution and the enhancement of your sentence from 2.5 years, which was problematic, as far as I'm concerned, to begin with, to 10 years on that fateful July 20th, 2010. What happened?
You all know that the government has an agenda. And I think that their agenda for me was to make an example of the lawyer that was fighting them the most. And that was what happened to me. That's why. And it was just brought and exaggerated by the one judge on the appeals panel that could not stomach the fact that instead of getting anywhere near the 30 years the government wanted to sentence me to, I had walked out of there with 2.25 years. So he made his pitch, and even though the other judges demurred, that is, they didn't just fall into line, he still was able to convince, and certainly John Hodel, the judge, did give me the 10 years to my surprise and to the shock of everybody in the courtroom, the courtrooms, I should say. I think we had like 4 courtrooms full that afternoon.
Yeah, overflow, yeah, overflow, overflow.
So every time in prison when I was reviewed, there was that get out of jail date 2018. That was when I would have been released with good time and everything else. So that was a stark reality. But then an even starker reality intruded, and that was when I was told that my cancer, which had been in remission, had metastasized and shown up again, and this time it was lodged in my lungs and my lymph and in part of my bone. So that brought a whole new reality. So I'm very well aware, obviously, of everything that's available to any prisoner to be able to use what's available to get the system to show any kind of compassion. So I, of course, immediately drafted a letter, got in touch with the lawyers, got in touch with my support network, and, you know, we were ready to go on the compassionate release. That was back in, March or April of 2013. I went to the counselor. He said, forget about it. You'll never get it. Why are you doing this? You were making work for us. You'll never get this. And she enlisted others of her ilk to also confront me and say, Sue, what are you doing? You can't get compassionate release. So I just said to them what I've always said, Mimi. I said, listen, I've been fighting fights like this where they told me I couldn't do it all my life. And if you think I'm going to stop now, you are crazy. So I submitted the application. And, of course, that first application was granted by the warden, by the doctors, the people who saw me every single day. Unfortunately, Washington, by July, had said, no, you're not going to go, and had all sorts of specious reasons for that. Nevertheless, we decided we would resubmit the application. My oncologist there in Texas had given me a shorter date because doctors who had written up, and by that I include my own daughter, Dr. Brown, as well as two others, had written up that her calculation was off, that she hadn't calculated properly. So in order to make that right, she did calculate properly. So that gave me the right, you know, I was in the guidelines of what compassionate release was. And I reapplied, and the warden didn't even put it to the committee. He sent it right on to Washington. And then Washington, and that was Ralph in front of the White House during the whole month of August, carrying his sign, urging people, organizing in the 104-degree heat, my beloved husband out there. And we saw very little push, very little progress, nothing much happening. And this dragged on through September, through October, through November. And we finally came to understand that we needed a push. We did more letter writing. We were urging people, don't stop now, keep on, get the people on the petition. And it's funny, my cousin called me this morning and said, Ralph was relentless. First we would, you know, he would call and say, write a letter. So we'd write a letter. Then as soon as the letter got written, he'd be back on us saying, okay, do a bunch of emails, guy. You can do that. That doesn't take much. You know, that was Ralph for the whole movement. Ralph was not going to let up. And there were others, of course. When I say Ralph, Ralph was the poster boy of this, but I shouldn't say boy. Oh, my God, I'm going to be in big trouble now. But anyway, so many others.
Well, you know, I remember.
People's history. I mean, we cannot, we need to do it the old-fashioned way, and that is, you know, have a situation where the people want to do it, and they will do it.
You know, I remember one particular night, there were so many people lined up in front of, in Manhattan, the correctional institution where you were being held, and yelled and screamed and had noisemakers. And at some point, we saw other people who were incarcerated, and then your figure appeared and buoyed our spirits. Also, that great moment of people coming together consistently and perseveringly, really with the leadership of Ralph Poynter. But I'm interested in the incredible perversion of what we call compassionate release, and understanding that it wasn't long before your release that Herman Wallace got out, a mere hours before he lost his life after decades of solitary confinement. So the continuing lessons in what we need to understand about the reality of political prisoners in this country?
To me, the reality we need to learn is there is a difference. It is not like just, quote, doing political work for prisoners. These are people who have been targeted, that have vast opposition from law enforcement segments. You know, Leonard Peltier should have been out 10, 15 years ago, but the FBI, who knows he didn't commit the crimes for which he's in prison, they know by their own forensic testing and everything else, they are the ones that picketed in front of the White House to make sure he would never get out. If anyone is deserving, I mean, you can't say deserving. They're all deserving. How can I say anyone? He is, you know, they are all in death camps because if they do get sick, there's so little medical care. They are in death camps because, and I say this, I think the most touching letter I ever received that I wept over was from Atul Shakur. He is a Florence. And he wrote to me and he said, "Great faith is that of the political prisoners who absolutely believe that the movement will get them out. They trust us to do this. That is why they did what they did back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And we cannot betray that trust. That is the most amazing and wonderful thing." Well, I was telling me that it's Cindy Anacoli that wrote that. But I'm sorry. We're right back. I'm sorry. It was
Gee, he's always there, isn't he?
You know, Mimi, he's a wonderful guy. We love him so.
Now, how wonderful. And Lynn, clearly the next chapter for yourself will be to begin the process of getting the health care that people do not get behind the walls, and to make sure that there is an awful lot of work left in that wonderful body and through that great mind of yours and sense of social justice as you move through certainly fighting the fight on your own health front, the kind of activity that you want to continue to pursue as you live your life back amongst the beloved community.
I love that, meaning the beloved community, and that's what it is for me, the beloved community. You know, I am going to pay primary attention to my health problems, because if I don't beat the cancer, then all else is lost. But we are going to be going up to Sloan Kettering probably someday this week to see exactly what they have in mind for me. Hopefully, it will not be terribly restrictive. I'm almost assured I will not be hospitalized, although that is a possibility. So I'm going to see what they recommend, what they have in mind, go through whatever testing process they have, listen to whatever they think might be available. I, of course, am also going to listen to all these wonderful holistic and other healers who have come forward to offer me their expertise. I'm going to get better, a combination of healing, traditional, and healing, not so traditional. And that is my goal now, because without, although I am in good shape, that is, I can do a program with Mimi Rosenberg of an evening. I am not very strong, but very tired. So I need to get to a point where I can sustain and do some of the things I always did. And, of course, that is my goal, is to get back and be able to be a contributing force. Because, you know, I know that people will pay attention if I speak. And I'm not saying that from an egotistical point of view, but just because we have been, and this is all my supporters, all the people that wrote to me during all these years. I'm talking about letters. I don't know you, you don't know me, but I heard about you and I just wanted to write to you. We are all writing letters. We are a group in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who got together tonight to write letters, and I am writing to you. Just the content of these letters was so immense that I just know I must harness this wonderful feeling, this wonderful energy, and put it to the use of all these other deserving political prisoners, from Abdul Shakur to Mumia Abu-Jamal, because I could name Marie Mason, Afra Siddiqui, everyone who suffers in prison because they acted altruistically, they acted in defense of their community.
Lynn, you do want to specifically also lift up now Albert Woodfox. In 1972, he was one of two young black men who were convicted of the murder of a prison guard in Louisiana's infamous Angola prison. And Alfred Woodcox and Herman Wallace were sentenced to life imprisonment, even though there was no physical evidence to either of the men to the crime. We want to make sure, after four decades of cruel treatment and flawed verdict, that Alfred Woodcox should be free today. And I want to remind people to write to the Attorney General. That's Attorney General James Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L, Office of the Attorney General, Post Office Box 94005, P.O. Box 94005, Baton Rouge, L.A., Louisiana. And the zip is 70804, 70804. And make sure you write and you say, we've got to get Albert Woodfox home now, as we did Sister Lynn Stewart. And we're going to talk to you in the many, many months and years that you have left about all the great ways of looking at progressive lawyering, at addressing the terrible plight of our prisoners, and also specifically about women in prison. Final message, my dear sister?
Let's free them all.
Absolutely. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.